You can find more information, photos and advice sheets on all the plants and recipes that we talk about in this podcast by heading to the links in the show notes or on our website at sarahraven.com. Welcome to Grow, Cook, Eat, Arrange, the podcast of me, Sarah Raven, and a selection of wonderful, interesting and inspiring guests. Today, I have Jo Fairley joining me. Jo lives near me in East Sussex. She actually lives in Old Town Hastings. And I've asked her to come on today because we've got Mother's Day on Sunday. And I really felt one of the things that somehow I think about on Mother's Day is perfume. And there is no one more gemmed up on flower scents, in my view, than Jo. And she is a serial entrepreneur, ending with the Perfume Society, which is her most recent venture. But I want to hand over to Jo to explain a bit about her biography and what she's done, because she's had the most incredible businesswoman / gardener / perfume addict life. So over to Jo. Hello, welcome.
Hello, Sarah. Lovely to be here. Well, I became an entrepreneur slightly by accident, actually. And my first venture was Green and Blacks with my husband. So that was a bit like hitting the bullseye first time round.
Yeah.
But then the bakery, a well-being centre, the Perfume Society, all the while working as a journalist, which is my background.
Yeah.
And I've never been a gardening writer, but I have written about everything from elephant polo to sumo wrestling, actually. So it's never been boring. But my absolute escape, of course, is gardening. I'm obsessed with scent. I have been ever since I was a little girl, tiny girl. And I love perfume. I love wearing perfume. I love smelling things. I'm a bit like Richard E. Grant, who says that he goes around literally smelling everything. I smell everything. Food, plants, things. And so I do sort of in my garden try to specialise in scented plants. I make an exception for tulips because very few of them have a smell. But if I'm putting in a shrub, I really want it to pay its way by wafting at me.
Yeah, yeah. And Jo, just so you all know, Jo has this wonderful, very unusual urban garden in that it's a walled garden that is, isn't it nearly an acre, Jo? It's like this huge walled garden. Yeah.
I went to a lecture a couple of years ago with Tom Stuart Smith, who you know very well. And he was saying, of course, one of the things that you sacrifice with a walled garden is a view. But actually, I was with my gardening writer friend, Stephanie Donaldson, and she and I both we looked at each other and was like, oh my God, we've got a walled garden with a view. We'd never thought about that. It means it's very sloping. It's a long way to my shed, uphill.
Yes. It's so great. And of course, with scent, the thing about walls is that it helps to pool the perfume more. And I remember that so well. Not on your list, actually, are wallflowers, but I remember so well walking into the cottage garden at Sissinghurst, which of course isn't walled entirely, but it's got the south cottage on one side of it and then these thick yew hedges all around it on the other sides. And the smell coming off on a warm April day from the wallflowers pumping against the south face of the south cottage was just extraordinary.
Yes, it does. It definitely helps. Of course, if you've got the warm walls and you've got things like star jasmine growing against them, it's amazing.
Yeah. Great. Well, let's start on your 12 best recommended flower plants for scent, really. So, I mean, so extending and continuing with our 12 best series, I asked Jo to have a think about what she would recommend every single one of us if we had room in our gardens, would include for their perfume. And this is her list. And there can be no better perfume list. So, Jo, number one.
Well, of course, it was complete torture to be stuck with 12. It all begins for me with scented geraniums because I love them. I collect them. And scented geraniums are not just my first scent memory, but they're actually my first memory of life generally. And I think I was about 2 And my grandmother, who I adored, had a little tumble-down lean-to greenhouse off her kitchen. And I remember her taking me in there when I was tiny and rubbing my leaves on scented geraniums, which she grew and loved, and then making me smell my fingers. And it's such a vivid memory that when I smell, I think it must have been Attar of Roses, the scented geranium, I can not only see her and imagine I'm right there in that greenhouse, but also I can actually see the print that was on her dress that she was wearing.
That's amazing.
So I completely love them. And every time I smell them, of course, I think of, we called her Lally. And so I think of Lally every time I smell scented geraniums. I collect them. I bought several from you, but I also, you know, if I'm going to an unusual nursery and they've got an unusual scented geranium, I'll often pick it up. I got a couple of great ones from Beth Chateau a few years ago. There's one that smells just of marmalade. I mean, it's amazing. So I couldn't live without those. And my shed is currently, they're overwintering in my shed, so I can hardly get in right now.
But it's so true that thing that you say of scents really sort of incredibly imprinting a memory, isn't it? I mean, my aunt was a great scent person and would always have jasmine in the house and hyacinths and paperwhites and things. And I just need to smell one of those, and I can just totally see her hall just so clearly, where we used to go for Christmas when we were very small. And it is funny how it really, really embeds a memory, doesn't it?
It totally does. And scent goes into the part of the brain that's next to memory. So I think that's what it's all about. But yeah, it's like a TARDIS. I mean, you know, you can literally time travel when you smell a plant or a perfume that literally catapults you back through time.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. Great. And so what's your next one? You've already mentioned it actually on the walls, but let's go on to it. Number two.
Star jasmine. Trachylospermum jasminoides, I want to say. I don't know if I've got that right.
You have.
Basically, I prefer it to actual jasmine, and I'm much more successful with star jasmine than I am the kind of traditional jasmine. I find that quite often they dry out, or I have six flowers on a huge plant of lots of green leaves, etc. But star jasmine never fails me. After a few years, they get a bit tired, maybe six or 7 years, but the smell is just heady and exotic, and it's like an uber jasmine to me. And I have outside our back door, in this steep walled garden, is a courtyard area, and I've got a couple of big ones growing there. And in the summer, it's amazing sitting there having supper and just you're in a cloud of jasmine. But what I like about it as a plant is that it doesn't lose its leaves in the winter.
Yes, it's evergreen.
I've certainly got a couple that do this. They go the most incredible rusty color, the leaves over the winter, and they're absolutely beautiful. So I prefer it. I do always plant it out and try and bring back, but not with any great success, I have to say.
No, it's true. They're nothing like as flowery. And the other thing is that I only recently learnt, actually, and I don't know where your little courtyard, I think it might be north facing, but they grow in dappled shade, don't they? Perfectly happily.
They do. I think they're actually a bit happier in shade than they are in bright sunshine.
Yeah, which is so useful, isn't it? To have a climber for an east or north facing wall. I mean, that is just a winning plant, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Very good. Number three.
So Sarcococca confusa, or indeed pretty much any Sarcococca.
Yeah.
I think they have green, dark green, shiny, smallish leaves. And then one day I will go into the garden and they will have these little creamy white flowers kind of almost hidden under the leaves.
Yeah.
And I'll know that they're out because the second I walk outside the back door, again, just this sweet, exotic fragrance from these flowers that are almost microscopic.
Yes.
I mean, it's quite staggering how much they pump out for the size that they are. And I like them because, again, it's an evergreen. And, you know, I've learned over the years that the more kind of structure I can have in the garden, the better. when you've got a big old walled garden, it likes quite a lot of evergreen stuff. So yeah, so I replaced a Daphne that died with a Selka Cocker that's now, I suppose, got to about 3 foot in a couple of years.
Wow.
And it's really cool with me, and it's out at the moment. And honestly, all you need, Sarah, is just a sprig,
yeah,
in a vase by your bed. And you know, you're, yeah, lying there in the dark and you can smell it. It's just the most incredibly powerful thing. And I don't think that they are terribly widely used. None of my friends seem to know. You know, they go, what's that amazing smell? It's a Selka Cocker.
And yeah, it's a good name too, isn't it? We have it, funnily enough, in the north facing bed in the car park here. And, you know, for most of the year, it's a tad dull perhaps, but you're so right. Actually, from January until April, you get out of your car and you just walk into this perfume cloud of, it's just incredible, of the most delicious, not sort of unlike those winter flowering honeysuckle sort of perfumes, slightly spicy, I always think it is, slightly sort of incense-y.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not dissimilar to Daphne, which I'm going to talk about in a second.
Yes.
But yeah, I think mine is in the darkest, darkest spot. It's in a spot that gets no sunlight whatsoever, at the bottom of a really tall wall that faces north, and yet you get that smell of it. And, you know, that is an ace plant.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, the combination of the Trachispermum and the Selka Cocker, I mean, for any of you that have got a really dark, dank, shady, pretty miserable north-facing yard or whatever, or wall, then those are two absolute must-have plants as far as I'm concerned. And I, you know, with the Selka Cocker, you've got sort of winter into spring covered, and with the Trachispermum, you've got spring into, well, certainly summer covered. So you've got a perfumed spot there with no sun at all.
Well, I try and have something for every month of the year. Obviously much easier in summer, but certainly through the winter.
Yeah.
So my next one, sweet peas, of course.
Yes. Good.
It is a smell for me that is just, it's shrieks of summer. They only flower, you know, for those precious couple of months, and God, they're hard work, you know, tying them in and pinching them out and making sure they get watered and fed all the time, etc. So I don't know what, in terms of what my hourly rate would be, what a bunch of sweet peas actually costs me to grow.
Yeah.
But you know, a handful of them in a little vase by the bed, and it's just, there's such a fresh scent to sweet peas. And it's a fragrance that actually, interestingly, no perfumer has ever.
No.
So you can only get it from those beautiful flowers. And of course, you know, I try to grow a wide selection of colours, but I think you have said in the past that the Matsukana is the little one, which has pathetically short stems, is the one that really packs the most fragrant punch.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on Matsukana, and I'm totally with you on sweet peas. You just got to grow them. Even if you just grow one teepee, you know, even if it's in a small pot and it's just got sort of four uprights, particularly they need urgent sowing though, because they really need to be planted out before it gets hot and dry. So, so there's still time, but probably, you know, seedling's not a bad idea either, but Lathyrus Matsukana is a must-have for a garden scent. Completely agree.
Well, I have to say that mostly in the past I've bought them as little plants rather than trying to nurture the seeds. But I've got someone lovely working with me who's worked for you, called Lizzie Maynard.
Yes.
Has handed my sweet pea seedlings through so far, defying the mice, and we're quite hopeful.
Good. Excellent. So then your favourite roses, because we've got to do roses, haven't we?
Lots of roses. Roses were my mum's thing. She was a bit of a hybrid tea person, I have to say, but she absolutely loved roses. And I've got sort of memories of my mother in her shorts with a fag in one hand and a pair of secateurs in the other, tending to her roses. But I like the David, most, you know, mostly they're David Austin, because I think that they're so well suited to our climate. They're quite relatively disease free, and they look as good as they smell. But I think my favourite scented one plants, or, you know, I obviously I would not plant a rose if it didn't have a smell. It just is inconceivable to me. So Gertrude Jekyll, I absolutely love. I mean, it's a kind of hot, not quite hot pink, but a deep pink, but with the most amazing rosy smell. I mean, that's the only way I can describe it.
It's archetypal rose, isn't it?
Exactly. And then there's one that I was given called Gentle Hermione, which is paler and very kind of, it's got soft, blousy petals. But there's one that is a hybrid tea that I absolutely love, which, again, I don't, the only other person I know who knew this rose was Evelyn Lauder, who was the wife of Leonard Lauder, who still runs the Estee Lauder empires. And she was basically responsible for all of their fragrance creations. She oversaw all of that. And she had some Double Delight roses on her roof above Park Avenue. Mm. And she asked a perfumer to capture the scent of that in something called Headspace technology, where they put a kind of glass dome over the flower and they can literally measure every scent molecule in there and recreate it. And so that became a note in Pleasures, the fragrance Pleasures. And Double Delight's amazing because it's called Double Delight because it smells amazing, but it also, so it smells slightly lemony. It's quite crisp for a rose fragrance, but it smells very, very fresh and rosy. But the leaf of the petals, they start out quite yellow, and then they get this wonderful pink to burgundy tinging at the edge. Wow. So that as they age, they change colour.
Yeah.
And I really love that. I mean, they look very pretty in a little posy vase.
And lovely on the bush then, because you've got the different...
Lovely on the bush.
Yeah.
I can't say it's the most generous flowerer of any rose, but I wouldn't be without it. I absolutely wouldn't be without it. I love it.
And is it quite widely available?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it was in one of those many catalogues that are flopping on my doormat at the moment.
Well, we're going to put it on our trial list.
Put it on your trial list. Lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. So onwards, I absolutely adore your next one. And this reminds me of my mother so much. So for Mother's Day, it's a good one to talk about. So yeah, next one is a rhododendron.
It's a rhododendron. Who knew that rhododendrons smell? So I was at Ford Abbey a few years ago and a couple of years ago and came out of their shop and it's like, oh my God, what's that smell?
Yeah,
and
it's
a rhododendron fragrantissima in a pot. And it's like, again, it's like an uber jasmine smell. It's a white floral. The flowers are much bigger than a jasmine and they were absolutely filling this courtyard garden with their smell. And it was in a pot. And I immediately, as I was standing in front of the plant, Googled. I asked what it was and I Googled where I could get it. And I had to go on a waiting list at Burncoos Nurseries,
yes,
I think.
Yes.
And eventually they emailed me to say they had one in stock. And it actually didn't do anything last year. I think it got a bit upset by being in transit. But I'm hopeful that this year it will come good and fill my sort of garden room with the most amazing, intense, heady, tropical smell. But yeah, I had no idea that rhododendrons could smell that good.
It's incredible, isn't it? And it's such a good time as well. I've actually got one too that my mum gave me. She'd built up from cuttings and had three. And I have it here and I try and it's just about to come into flower and I bring it into the house and I mean, it perform for about 6 weeks, I guess. So it's sort of quite a lot of TLC for the proportion of scent, but it's so worth it. It's just incredible. I couldn't agree more.
Absolutely. And I do seek out, I mean, I'm going to talk about some books at the end, but, you know, I'm always looking out for something that's unusual and secret, if you like.
Right. On to the Daphne.
Daphne, particularly Adora Oreo marginata, and I have a sprig on my desk which Sarah will be able to see but you won't, and that is just, again, all you need of so many of these is one little branch and you can fill a room with the fragrance. And what I love about this is it's so spicy. Mm. It's so incensey. It's such a complex smell. You know, pretty little waxy looking flower, pink and sort of crimson. But oh my God, that smell. There's also something maybe a tiny bit clovey and medicinal about it.
Yes, yes.
But I completely love it. So that's on my desk today. Yeah. That will go down to my bed tonight.
Yeah.
But I have found that after 5 or 6 years, they start to fail. Yeah. And so I always try to have one coming on somewhere that will take its place. And I've got a few other Daphnes. But that's the one that really pushes my buttons, I have to say. The others are pretty, but this is so complex as a scent. Mm,
it's the perfume is the best, yeah.
It really is.
It lasts well. I got back from my 60th birthday excursion and one of the members of staff here had put some by my bed. And it lasted 10 days and just incredible. So, so nice. And I agree with you. It's just got a little bit more complexity to any of the others, like Jacqueline Postel or whatever. I find I'm right with you on it, but it's not a strong grower. Particularly, you're on the same. You're not on the same sort of soil as me, but it does struggle here a bit. But it's very easy to strike from cuttings. I remember in London when I started gardening, it really is quite easy. So I had one there, and when I was leaving London, I took 5 cuttings, just shoved them around the edge of the pot, and you know, within a couple of months, it had rooted. And you would think with a shrub, it would take much longer, but it didn't. It was easy.
They're good to just tuck in. So my next one is Eau de Cologne Mint. Basically, all herbs. I love the smell of herbs. I walk through the garden rubbing my fingers on herbs, but I especially like Eau de Cologne Mint because it just smells like Eau de Cologne. It's like 4711. You know, it's got such a kind of citrus note with the mint, and I also like it because it's a kind of really nice dark greeny burgundy color. It's quite interesting to look at as well. I mean, you have to keep in that pot, because I'd have a garden full of Eau de Cologne mint if I let it have its way. But I'm also very big on putting sprigs of herbs in little posies by the bed
arrangements. Yes,
I think whether it could be sage, it could be tarragon, it could be mint, it could be whatever. But I think it just adds an extra little dimension with the colour.
Yeah. And do you use it with potatoes as well, or is it a bit sharp for that?
I think it would taste slightly perfumey. Good old Moroccan mint spearmint for potatoes. But yeah, I love it. I mean, I have got a mint batch that's edible, and we, you know, it's just beginning to come up now. So we've got little bits of mint in things, fresh mint, and nothing like it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So tuberose is my next. I have tried to grow tuberose and never got a flower, but I don't give up. I think probably my greenhouse isn't hot enough, but I love the smell of them. Not on my skin. It gives me a headache if I wear a tuberose fragrance, but I had an amazing experience last year. And it's one of the reasons I love my job editing. So I edit a magazine called The Scented Letter for the Perfume Society. And I get to do incredible smelly things. And last summer was invited to join in the tuberose harvest in the south of France for a company called Matière Première. Mm. And the perfumer behind it, a man called Aurélien Guichard, owns his own tuberose fields and rose fields just outside Grasse. And they took us there in big blacked out limos. And as we arrived, we were blindfolded and we got, it was incredible. We got out of the cars and were led by the hand and seated down outside on this balmy summer's evening. And at a given moment, we were told to take off our blindfolds, and each, we could smell it. I mean, we were each at the end of a row of tuberose growing, and they're about 3 foot high, incredible white flowers. I mean, it was incredible.
How incredible.
And the next day we were given aprons and we were invited to go back and help with the harvest, and you're popping off these little white flowers and putting them in your apron pocket. And honestly, I'm a bubble wrap popper. I love popping bubble wrap for stress. And it's like that, but it's smelly, you know. So it was honestly one of the most fun things I've ever done.
Gosh. Yeah, on how to get them flowering, you're absolutely right. They're tricky as hell, I think. What we've found here is planting them later is really important. And actually, they don't even come into growth. Basically, they don't start shooting until May, but even June with a heated bench. And then what we find is actually if you leave them in the same pot, and they will flower a little bit that first year in the autumn, October, November time, but they really need that basal heat. And then the following year, they seem to be better for us, and they don't like root disturbance. So we try and put them in terracotta and just sort of leave them. But you need to remember to bring them in onto the heat. So you have to have a heated bench or heated greenhouse, really, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's clearly where I'm going wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they're not in our climate. Not easy. Not easy. Definitely not. But absolutely wonderful, wonderful scent. So your next one is one of my tip top favorites, which is quite sort of out there because people don't think of it as a perfume, but it's tomatoes, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I love it. So that was the other smell that is my memory of my grandma, because she grew tomatoes as well as geraniums in her greenhouse. And so probably minutes after she'd made me smell the geranium, she rubbed my fingers on a tomato leaf, and I can remember smelling that. And the greatest, you know, I love in the summer at night, I go and give my greenhouse tomatoes plenty of TLC. And, you know, I love pinching them out. I love taking care of them because of the smell that it leaves on my hands. Basically,
I totally agree.
People have done quite a successful, you know, used it as a candle scent and that sort of thing. Yeah. And I quite like it in that way too. But it for me, I completely love it. Completely love it.
Yeah, that is, it's sort of the green. It's slightly tobacco-y, isn't it? It's slightly sort of, I remember being in Africa and walking into a tobacco barn, which you would think would be disgusting, but actually the smell of fresh tobacco was incredible.
Yeah.
And it's rather like that. It
is quite a really quite complex smell, a bit earthy.
Yeah.
Love it. Love it, love it, love it. Never met a tomato I didn't like.
Yeah, couldn't agree
more. Well, actually, supermarket tomatoes, I don't like those. I don't understand what this thing is at the moment, but everyone going, I can't get a tomato. What are they doing?
It's March!
Yeah.
No, I totally agree. Okay, so two more, and then we've run out of time, but it's so nice to talk to you, Jo. So two more.
So I'm going to rush through them because I want to give you a couple of book recommendations. So
wonderful.
Stephanotis, which you can buy in just about any garden centre. And the key to that, I saw it in a greenhouse at Chelsea Flower Show a couple of years ago where Alitex had, it normally comes in a kind of spiral where they've wired it together. And the key is to unravel it, untwizzle it, and sort of find a way of running it along a flat surface, either in a bathroom or in a greenhouse or whatever. And again, it's that stunning, heady, white, exotic scent that smells so not like England. And but I much prefer to do that than leave it in its sort of circle in the pot. And Lily of the Valley, I almost forgot those.
Yeah.
The day we launched the Perfume Society was the 1st of May, and we delivered 100 little bunches of Lily of the Valley to women in London who we admired. In the spirit of the French tradition of doing just that, on the 1st of May, they give Lily of the Valley to women they love and admire. So I will always remember the smell of the Lily of the Valley for that. But I finally also have got it going in my garden. So it just, they've never done their thing where I've put them.
Yeah.
They've ended up literally just running along this one wall now.
Good.
And all the way along the foot of this one wall. And it smells incredible. But, you know, that was about the 10th attempt, I think.
Yes. It's funny, isn't it? How they just,
they somehow made their way over to this, you know, really inhospitable section of the garden where the soil is rubbish.
Yeah.
But they're really happy.
Yeah. I remember in my parents' garden when I was a child, there was an outdoor loo that was never used, actually, that was really, really horrible sort of shack in the garden. And all the way around the north side of that loo was just incredible carpet of Lily of the Valley. Because I've got it going here, but it it tends to form a lot of leaf and not so much flower. And I think you just have to leave it and leave it. And it had probably been there, I don't know, 100 years or something. And yeah, it's one of those things that doesn't like dividing. So before we move on to your book, so we can all remember Trachispermum, Soccer Cocker and Lily of the Valley like shade. So, you know, you don't need a sunny garden to have a perfume factory just outside your back door, do you?
Absolutely. But, I love lying in bed at night reading about scented plants and planning my next purchase. And I think that there are some great books about scented plants out there. And I just wanted to give the listeners some recommendations from my bookshelf.
Fabulous.
So the first one is just a vintage book called Gardens of Fragrance. It's, I don't know, it, well, I'm just looking up the date in the front. It is by somebody called Jeffrey W. Henslow, and it's 1932. Right. Can't remember where I bought it. It says £12 on the inside. But it's a wonderful vintage book, very lyrical writing about scented plants.
Great.
There is a really... Do you have any books, Sarah, by this man, Roy Genders?
No, I don't know Roy Genders.
He's got dozens and dozens of books in print.
Wow.
But my favourite of his books is just called Perfume in the Garden.
Wow.
And there's no Latin in there that I can tell whatsoever. It's a total inspiration of usual and unusual things that you can have in your garden, including aromatic fruits, trees, etc. So, but I think that the... My two favourite books are Isabel Bannerman.
Yes, I was hoping you were going to mention her. Yes, great.
She's so brilliant at writing about scented plants. She's so brilliant at writing anyway.
Yeah.
I've literally got every corner of every page turned down of notes to take, to of what to plant, etc. But she really, really communicates the way that different plants smell. But it's very lyrical way. And then the last one, not wild about the title of it, because it's a play on words, it's called The Sensual Garden by Ken Drews,
yes,
who is, as I'm sure you know, a fantastic American garden writer. Again, it is an American book, so not every single plant will flourish here,
sure,
obviously, because we're not in Florida and some of the plants are quite tropical, but it's a great inspiration. He's got great examples of, you know, which magnolias smell the best and so on. And honestly, I mean, I'm just flicking through it here, but it makes me realize that my list, you know, I said it could be 112, but it could have been 1012, I think.
Yes. Well, that's so nice to have that as a sort of a reading list. That's such a lovely idea. Jo, thank you very much. What an incredible lot of information you've packed in. And what a lot of inspiration. I've taken lots of notes. And I hope for all of you, for mothers and at my and Jo's age, Grandmother's Day, you will have a lovely time on Sunday and it'll be very perfumed and scent filled. We haven't even discussed the sort of politics of, is it scent? Is it perfume? Is it fragrance? Anyway, any of those words, as far as I am concerned.
I don't care what you call it, as long as you enjoy it.
Exactly. And include it in your gardens. Thanks, Jo, so much. See you soon, I hope.
Have a fragrant day.
Thanks so much for listening to Grow Cookie to Range with me and Jo Fairley chatting about garden fragrance. Mainly her, actually, to be honest, because she's such an expert. Next week, I thought, because it's sowing time and planting time, I've asked my friend Butter Wakefield, who's a garden designer of small spaces, who concentrates very much on getting a lot out of a little surface area, which is a subject dear to my heart. And we're going to talk about cut flowers from small urban city gardens into the house. And so join me next week with Butter. You can find more information, photos and advice sheets on all the plants and recipes that we talk about in this podcast by heading to the links in the show notes or on our website at sarahraven.com.